I think that what was so shocking to us was, you know, one of the things that we realized that, you know, when we published our first article about Weinstein in 2017, we had been able to connect some of the dots of what had happened with his alleged predation going back over the years and how he had been able to cover it up. But since then, in the course of reporting this book, we were really able to pull the curtain back on this machinery that was in place to silence women and to help Weinstein try to fight our investigation.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. For many years, reporters tried to get to the truth about Harvey Weinstein's treatment of women. Rumors of wrongdoing had long circulated, but in 2017, Jodi Kantor and Megan Tohey began their investigation into the prominent Hollywood producer for the New York Times. They later ended up winning a Pulitzer Prize for it. During months of confidential interviews with top actresses, former employees, and other sources, Jodi and Megan found disturbing and long-buried allegations and numerous secret payouts and non-disclosure agreements, all hiding experiences of sexual harassment and assault. On October 5th, 2017, Megan and Jodi released their New York Times report detailing these accounts. Nothing could have prepared them for what followed. Women from all over the world came forward with their own stories of sexual harassment and assault. Over the next 12 months, hundreds of men from every walk of life were outed following allegations of wrongdoing. On this episode, you'll hear from Megan Tohey, who will share the journey that both her and Jodi undertook to tell the story that changed the world and enabled every woman everywhere to tell their story too. Megan Tohey is an investigative reporter with the New York Times. In 2017, Megan, along with her colleague Jodi Kantor, published a report about Harvey Weinstein detailing decades of sexual abuse allegations, which included more than 80 accounts of sexual abuse or assault. A worldwide wave of allegations followed the report, known as the Weinstein Effect. This report was the spark that ignited an entire movement as people came forward to share stories of powerful men engaging in sexual harassment and assault.
I decided that I had to speak up. If I didn't, who was going to do it?
He grabs the back of my head and just sort of comes in and puts his lips right on.
You have not spoken up because they're afraid. I'm hoping that now they will take the step to speak out too.
The Weinstein allegations were described as the tipping point that resulted in a national reckoning against sexual harassment. The effect gave rise to the Me Too movement, which encourages people around the world to share their experiences of sexual harassment and assault using the hashtag Me Too. It also resulted in many men being removed from their positions of power.
Ford fired co-founder Harvey Weinstein last year. Laura was let go 1 week after CBS News fired Charlie.
Vitaly says he's stepping away from it all following the allegations.
I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
In recognition of the impact and value that Megan and Jodi's reporting had, they were both honored in 2018 when the New York Times was awarded the 2018 Pulitzer Prize for Public Service. Now both women have co-authored a book detailing the work entitled, She Said, Breaking the Sexual Harassment Story That Helped Ignite a Movement. Here, Megan shares how this journey started.
So in 2017, when my partner Jodi Kantor first began the Harvey Weinstein investigation, you know, there had been rumors about his alleged predation for years, and there had been journalists who had tried to report on those allegations sort of only to get stuck or have their efforts come to a halt. And so when she set out, we weren't quite certain whether or not there was any truth there, if there was any there. But slowly but surely, over the course of many months, I joined Jodi about 6 weeks into the project, we were able to start to piece together allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault against Weinstein going back decades. We heard these accounts from famous actresses. We also heard these accounts from young women who had worked in his companies, first at Miramax and then the Weinstein Company. And we also discovered that he had been able to, in some cases, cover his tracks by paying out secret settlements that silenced many of his victims. And so once we were able to start to piece together these allegations and identify a trail of financial payoffs, we realized that we did in fact have a story. We just needed to do all of the due diligence and other efforts to be able to publish it. We had no idea what impact the story would have. In fact, two nights before we published the story, we were working around the clock to get to the finish line. And finally, like two nights before we were set to publish, Jody and I left the office at about 1 o'clock in the morning. We said, we've got to step away from our computers and go home and try to get a little bit of sleep. So we were sharing a taxi back to Brooklyn. And in the silence of that cab, we actually turned to each other and said, do you think anybody's going to read this story? Because the truth was that Harvey Weinstein was not that famous outside of the entertainment industry. We couldn't be sure whether or not, we just didn't have any idea about what the impact of the story would be. We had been so obsessively focused on getting to the finish line with our investigation and putting ourselves in a position in which we would be able to publish our findings, but we really didn't know what the impact would be.
Harvey Weinstein is an American former film producer who, together with his brother Bob Weinstein, co-founded the entertainment company Miramax, which produced several successful independent films. Since Megan and Jody's initial reporting in 2017, over 80 women have accused Harvey Weinstein of sexual harassment, assault, or rape, with a total of 18 allegations of rape. According to women's reports, Weinstein invited young actresses or models into the hotel room or office on the pretext of discussing their career, and he then demanded massages or sex. In October 2017, following sexual abuse allegations against Weinstein, he was dismissed from his company and expelled from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Ultimately, on May 25th, 2018, Harvey Weinstein was arrested in New York and charged with rape and other offenses. There are so many shocking details in the story, but here, Megan shares what surprised her most.
I think that what was so shocking to us was, you know, one of the things that we realized that, you know, when we published our first article about Weinstein in 2017, we had been able to connect some of the dots of what had happened with his alleged predation going back over the years and how he had been able to cover it up. But since then, in the course of reporting this book, we've been able to bring together so many other pieces of the puzzle. And I think that what was shocking to us was the people who helped bring the truth to light and some of the people who helped cover it up. We were really able to pull the curtain back on this machinery that was in place to silence women and to help Weinstein try to fight our investigation. For example, there's this, you know, famous feminist attorney, Lisa Bloom, who has spent years working with victims of sexual harassment and sexual assault and crossed over to the other side to help Weinstein. And she has said that she did that because she thought he had only engaged in inappropriate comments towards women and that she wanted to help him apologize. Well, we've obtained confidential records that show that she had much deeper knowledge of the serious allegations against him and played a much darker role. We obtained her billing records, which show an hour-by-hour accounting of all the work she did for him. We also obtained a memo that she wrote to him, basically her kind of job interview memo, in which she was spelling out all the underhanded tactics she was going to use to help him undermine his accusers. She was basically saying, I'm going to use all of my experience helping victims, harness that, and use it with you to work against them. And it was just one of the sort of surprising, you know, really one of the more jaw-dropping moments in our reporting to realize that she had, in fact, been one of his chief enablers, this famous feminist attorney. But there were also other surprising figures, you know, the people who helped bring the truth to light. Erwin Ryder was one of Harvey Weinstein's top executives in his companies going back decades. He was the accountant. He was in the kind of inner orbit. And he, in 2014 and 2015, had become increasingly concerned about his boss's treatment of women. He was watching the Bill Cosby story unfold, and he thought, oh my goodness, you know, what if we're going to have a Cosby situation on our hands? And so he had tried internally to take some steps to hold Weinstein accountable and do something about it, only to see those efforts fail time and again. And so when we came knocking on Erwin Ryder's door in 2017, in the course of our reporting, he actually agreed to start meeting with us in secret and ultimately became almost like a deep throat figure in the investigation, providing us not only tips on people who Weinstein had allegedly hurt in recent years within his own companies, but also providing us with an internal record that basically helped us cross the finish line and be able to publish the truth. So the fact that Weinstein's own accountant, this, you know, middle-aged man, became kind of one of the secret heroes of this story.
Harvey Weinstein might have acted alone, but he was ultimately supported through a system. It's important to understand how the acceptance of those around him and their support with silencing women played a critical role in enabling his behavior. Former colleagues and collaborators of Weinstein told reporters that his activities were enabled by employees, associates, and agents who set up the meetings, as well as lawyers and publicists who suppressed the complaints with payments and threats. For example, Bob Weinstein was allegedly involved in 3 settlements with accusers. This is a system that enables sexual harassment and assault. While Harvey Weinstein might be held accountable for his actions one day, that same system still exists today in many workplaces, enabling sexual harassment and assault.
So we wanted to make sure that in the course of reporting this book and bringing together other pieces of the puzzle, we were able to report out some of the really profound questions about Harvey Weinstein's own companies, which over the years became complicit in his abuse. There were figures at his companies, whether it was Erwin Ryder, the accountant, or members of the board of the company that oversee it, or Harvey Weinstein's brother and business partner, Bob Weinstein, who got glimpses of the problem and in fact wanted to do something about it. They tried to intervene in these various ways. But ultimately, they made the mistake of viewing this as an issue kind of only of liability to the company. Basically, instead of taking steps to really ensure that women were protected from Weinstein, they instead took steps to ensure that they thought the company wouldn't suffer any liability or have to take any financial hits because of the problem. And in doing so, they really missed this whole massive moral problem that was staring them in the face and ultimately destroyed the company. You know, since we published that first Weinstein story and the allegations have continued to spill out, the company basically imploded and was forced into bankruptcy. And so it became a real illustration of how companies can, even when they get glimpses of a problem, take such a narrow approach in trying to address it that they ultimately set themselves up for failure. You know, the case of Bob Weinstein, you know, he, for the first time, opened up to us in a series of interviews about what he knew and when he knew it and what he tried to do. He said that he was, in fact, aware of sexual misconduct allegations against his brother going back decades. In fact, he had provided money that had helped silence 2 of those women. But he also, like so many other people, chose to believe Weinstein when he said that basically these were just attempts at shakedowns and that he was only guilty of extramarital affairs and nothing else. And that Bob came to also view his brother's problem as sex addiction. Bob had been somebody who had suffered from and recovered from substance abuse and kind of chose to see this world and his brother in this very narrow frame of basically an addiction that he could somehow get treatment for. So we include in the book this pleading letter that Bob wrote to his brother in 2015, in which he's begging him to get treatment for his quote-unquote misbehavior. And it's just one of the documents that we produce in its entirety so that people can basically read for themselves what it looks like when people are trying to intervene, but also how they ultimately become complicit in abuse. And I think there's the question of how individuals and institutions, the failures of individuals and institutions to address these problems when they start to surface. But, you know, another question of, if you want to talk about the system, another thing that we encountered in the course of our reporting was secret settlements. These are being used not just in the case of Weinstein, but in cases of sexual harassment and sexual assault across the country. Oftentimes when, you know, victims, after they've suffered, you know, a violation of some kind, they will turn to lawyers seeking help because they want to do something about what's just happened. And oftentimes they're told that their best and sometimes only option is to enter a secret settlement in which they accept money in exchange for silence.
While financial settlements provide the much needed compensation for victims, they also silence women and enable the system of sexual assault to take hold. Given the challenges they create, and especially in the Weinstein case, it's worth considering whether they actually help or hinder women.
There's no question that oftentimes victims, you know, can and should receive financial compensation for what's happened to them. But we realized in the course of our reporting that these secret settlements have also allowed alleged predators like Harvey Weinstein to cover their tracks. Harvey Weinstein paid out as many as 8 of these secret settlements, stretching from 1990 to 2015. And so when we came knocking on the doors of those women, they were legally prohibited from telling us what had happened to them. And he had, in a sense, been able to make one payment to, like, erase his tracks, go on to allegedly hurt more women, make another payment to cover his tracks, and go on and allegedly hurt more and more women over the years because of these secret settlements. And the restrictive clauses that come with these are just shocking. Women can't tell their partners what's happened to them. They can't warn colleagues. They can't warn their friends. If they want to see a therapist, the therapist has to sign a confidentiality clause. And so it's clear that these have been, while they have indeed allowed, you know, women to receive financial compensation, they have also really raised questions about whether or not they pose public dangers.
When activist Tanara Burke started the Me Too campaign more than 10 years ago, her goal was to spread a message to survivors. You're heard and you're understood. When actress Alyssa Milano helped kick off the current phase of the movement 2 years ago, she wanted to give people a sense of the magnitude of the problem. As they made clear, hashtag MeToo has always been about raising awareness of the impact of sexual violence and creating change. For example, thanks to the MeToo movement, following the Weinstein case, several states have passed laws prohibiting the use of non-disclosure agreements in sexual misconduct cases. This includes California, New York, and New Jersey. Federal sexual harassment law and most state laws don't protect independent contractors because the laws only apply to employees. But following the MeToo movement, this is changing as states like New York are expanding their sexual harassment law. The Me Too movement also led to the establishment of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, which helped survivors of sexual misconduct, especially in low-wage industries, get access to legal representation. Since the fund launched in January 2018, it has raised over $24 million and connected over 3,600 people with attorneys to pursue possible legal action. These are just some of the ways that women have changed the world by sharing their stories.
The last thing we did in the course of reporting this book was to convene a group interview of women who have come forward and spoken out and gone public in various ways. This fall will mark the 3-year anniversary of the release of the Access Hollywood tape. It'll be the 2-year anniversary of the Weinstein story and the 1-year anniversary of Christine Blasey Ford testifying. In group interview, we had women who were central to all 3 stories. So we had Rachel Crooks, who was one of the first women to go on the record with an allegation against Donald Trump. We had some of the women who broke the silence on Weinstein, from Ashley Judd to Gwyneth Paltrow to Laura Madden. And we also had Christine Blasey Ford. And it was interesting because in this group interview, we wanted to ask them what it was like. I mean, there's no question that they had participated in stories that had helped shift society, but privately, what had been the impact for them? And what we realized is that every single woman coming forward had transformed their life in some way. And some people had been inspired to go on and do kind of more activism. For example, Zelda Perkins, one of the sources in the Weinstein investigation, is now gone on to basically wage a battle against secret settlements in the UK. She's really not just gone beyond her participation in journalism. She's now trying to make changes at the policy level. You know, Ashley Judd, the first actress to go on the record against Weinstein, has been heralded as a hero. You know, she is stopped in, you know, when she gets off an airplane, there are people who line up to shake her hands. She's at Harvard this year, and her title is just simply leader. She has really, you know, I think had a very positive experience of coming forward. You know, on the other hand, people like Rachel Crooks, one of the women to come forward with an allegation against Trump, has spent months of feeling like she was under attack and sort of shunned even by people in her own community. Christine Blasey Ford in this group interview was struggling with some of the stuff that she was reading about herself online. She had only recently been able to move back into her own home due to security threats that she was continuing to face. You know, on the other hand, she had received tens of thousands of letters from women and victims who were pouring out their hearts to her about their own experiences of sexual assault. And so what was clear to us in this group interview is that there's no guarantees about what's going to happen when you come forward and speak out. The only thing that's certain is that it's likely to have a significant transformative effect on your life.
It was really impactful to hear from Megan. The impact of both her and Jody's work will be felt for years to come. And all of this would not have been made possible without a number of brave people being willing to speak up. The lesson in this for all of us is that our voice matters. Our actions can either enable entire systems of sexual harassment and assault for decades, or they can be used to dismantle it on a global scale. If you haven't already, I encourage you to get a copy of Megan and Jody's book, She Said, which is an incredible account of what happened, as well as how this is playing out today. Thank you for tuning into our episode today. If you're interested in partnering with us or being a guest on the show, please reach out through our website, thefixpodcast.org. You can also sign up to our weekly newsletter and contribute your story there. Thanks again, and I'll catch you guys next week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.